watching the monkey.
Hello, folks, and welcome back to another episode of The Art of Being with the ACT Matrix. I'm one of your co-hosts, Kevin, and somewhere on your screen and, or on your voice, there's Phil.
I'm here. Phil.
Yeah, and Phil has a word from our sponsors.
Yes. Before we get started with our guest, Nesh, we like to do a little word from our sponsor, which is us. The way we sponsor this podcast is by conducting ACT Matrix certifications. So, if you're interested in doing some generous work and being part of a larger community that does ACT Matrix training, you can come and join us. The actual training itself is that you can just sign up for it. It wouldn't cost you anything. And then when you are ready to go for certification, then we would sit down and have a conversation about that. It's pretty easy to do. And more people are coming on board and getting involved. Right, Kevin?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Yeah. And by the way, if you go for certification, that includes a membership into the mastermind.
Yes.
And we get together. Well,
it's our little think tank that we have.
We've been doing for some years now.
Yes.
That's a fun thing. So, and just go to the actmatrixacademy.com.
Yep. That's where you sign up.
And that's where you sign up. And we'll be here. And now we have Nesh from way down under.
He just said the bottom of the world, he told me.
Bottom of the world. Now, what do they call beer down there? Let me see. What is that?
Enjoyable.
I like it.
what is it? Foster's Australian.
It's interesting. So I don't think too many Australians drink Foster's as a regular, but I know that when we export it sounds as though we do, and it's one of our big. That's no different.
It was such a great ad here in the United States.
Like a charm up here.
Oh yeah, and they had this really thick Aussie accent, and they would do Foster's Australian for beer or whatever it was. It was great.
Of course, I think we still push out there all of our normal Crocodile Dundee type.
Oh yeah,
scenario. Sure. Oh, we work that stuff. It worked like a charm.
Whenever Australians watch any of that stuff, we just cringe. When you see the reality of what's goes out there, we always panic. That's not us.
Yeah. Oh well. But anyway, Nesh is here to talk to us about some aspect of the art of being and the ACT Matrix and stuff. So on this podcast, and so what you got, Nesh?
Well, I thought we might just chat a little bit about, I suppose, integrating, at least for myself, whether it be, the ACT Matrix or, the idea of, Hexaflex, or whether we talk about, attachment or avoidance. I think it's about, for me, the overall integration of how I, observe the world, notice the world, reflect on my own being, hold my toward or away concepts and be understanding of that. And so, I'm not sure how others integrate, the ACT Matrix or, the Hexaflex or any of these philosophical, appreciations and understandings in their life. But I feel like I've embodied a lot of what has been offered in a way that, we're all trying to balance in busy lives. And so I know it's very challenging for me because I'm so busy. One of the things that I do is I like to keep busy, and for me it's about reflecting is my business and avoidance, behavior, is it an away behavior, or is it really, more of a toward? And sometimes that's a little bit confusing to know, because, as it's always kind of playing about, I can find myself, questioning that quite a lot. And, mm-hmm. It's hard to decipher at times, but that I think is what part of, the ACT Matrix is about, sitting in that center and actually reflecting and looking.
Yes.
Yep. Very much.
Very much so. Nash is talking about somebody can become literally what they call a workaholic, and they're actually avoiding a lot of stuff by working too much, so that you can all kinds of very sophisticated away moves out there, aren't there?
Absolutely. I mean, if I kind of reflect and look at the mind is with me, it's very rapid, it's very compelling in terms of providing to-do lists, what needs to be done. It certainly goes out and argues strongly for why these things are so important to do as quickly as possible. And it also likes to pat me on the back for achieving some of these things.
Yeah.
So it's very easy and comforting to be, told that you're achieving and doing something, ticking those boxes. And then, that natural experience of feeling at ease. That's the greatest reinforcer that you feel wonderful at the end of it.
Yeah. Till the next morning.
Right.
Until the next morning. Absolutely. until I wake up this morning at 4 a.m. to get onto this podcast.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Obviously a tour move.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to give you credit for that one. Definite tour.
Now that's when we do people from down under, anywhere from that side of the world, it's a different experience for them. We appreciate it though.
Yes, very much.
So okay. So that reflect your art of being, which is sitting at the middle of the matrix. Did you listen to Hank Robb's podcast with us? Noticing in the middle of the noticing.
Yeah.
Noticing you're noticing, which is wordless, the buzz of being.
I haven't.
You'll get a kick out of it.
Put that on your list.
I'm writing it down in that as we speak.
Many, several, I'm talking a dozen have told me they listened to that and really got a kick out of it. It was sort of a journey into self as context.
Yeah, here's what we did, Nash. We did the center in the middle, and then we did the buzz and the being.
Because the noticing that you're noticing is wordless, so it's just a buzz.
So it's a buzz. Yeah, I like that.
It was fun. You'll enjoy it. It was cool. So you're sitting there with noticing the buzz. And you said other people ask you about, what was it? You mentioned something in your comment. Oh, people asking you about business development or something.
Yeah. So, I get a lot of questions, about, running a practice, growing a practice.
Mm-hmm. What kind of practice?
So we've got 17 rooms here at psychology practice. So we pretty well only do sort of psychological counseling therapy, and there's a lot of moving parts when you're developing a practice, and mm-hmm. Staffing is certainly one, but you end up playing every hat that's known to man, whether it be acquiring a printer and trying to figure out the economics of one printer over another and the cost per page and what the consumables are worth, all the way through to, marketing, whether it be, marketing on the side of a road or, creating an A-frame to stick out the front of your business, mm-hmm. or whether it be something a little bit more technical like Facebook advertising or Google advertising or, remarketing. Doing the accounts, which, is incredibly complex in Australia. We've got, complex tax laws as most countries do, but being on top of all of that and doing your bookkeeping and the like.
Well, I'm tired.
Yeah.
Just listening to you, just because Phil and I don't do that.
And they're just a few, little aspects,
Oh my goodness. Do you have help?
Well, that In some sense, yes, absolutely. And this is part of the challenge of finding, you know, exceptional people and, you know, being patient. It's, you know, understanding it's a process and being patient. Patience also comes with, you know, exhaustive hours because, you know, to try and, you know, tick all of those boxes. If you're ambitious like myself and then, you know, run a podcast and do other initiatives and so on and so forth, you have to have support. So, and that grows with you as you kind of develop as well. But, you know, at the same time, you know, you're constantly questioning, you know, toward, away, you know, moves and where you sit and why you're doing some of these things, you know, because some are much easier to do. For example, I absolutely love sitting with clients and you know, being present and doing the therapy. And then there's another aspect, which is I love the idea of doing something that's a little bit larger than myself. And that's where the practice comes in. And that can be a bit tiring, you know, sometimes that's where the hard, you know, part of life is. And that's probably where the ACT sort of framework in my mind has to be operating more because it's easier to lose sight there.
Wow. And people ask you about all of this, how to set it up?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, in Australia, it's you know, relatively accessible to, and I'm sure it's probably not much different in the US and other countries. It's relatively accessible to, you know, after becoming a psychologist to start your own practice. The challenge is, I think the avoidance or the committed action that starts to, you know, either show up or break down.
Oh, no, really?
It becomes immense.
Right? Even down there, huh?
Wow.
Yikes.
Australians have that too, huh?
Yeah.
You mean stuff shows up and gets in the way.
And it does, and that's one of the hard things about, you know, I think living life, you know, whether it be about building a business or building a family, you know, the investment is immense, and, you know, being conscious of that is, you know, is certainly the greatest challenge because, you know, as we all know, when it gets tough and hard, you know, this is when we kind of recognize our toward waves, you know, the toward moves, either flourish and show up or, you know, or we start to wrestle a lot. And, you know, I think I might have a little bit of advantage in that, you know, maybe some of my psyche is already assisted in the way that I'm built, you know, with mum and dad being migrants to Australia and having an incredibly strong work ethic. And so maybe from a values perspective, it's a little bit easier for me to capture, you know, committed action, even when there's immense discomfort. You know, I've been in the military, and, you know, I'm sure many military, you know, families and listeners would know, you know, that there is a certain amount of discipline required, or, you know, learning to sit with immense discomfort. And I didn't find that much too difficult. I was actually expecting to sort of show up on the first day of recruit training and get flogged, and get spat on and, you know, get abused. And I didn't realize that, you know, the military is not much, not like that at all. You know, that there might be intimidation, but that wasn't too frightening. It was the lifestyle that was challenging for me, you know.
Quite different, right?
Yeah. Independence, yeah.
Wow. Okay. And so what's your advice to people setting up a practice in Australia?
I think look, there's lots of ways to look at it, and it depends what one's ambition is. So I think probably trying to recognize why you're going into private practice in the first place is important to establish that in one's mind and look at
lower right quadrant. Okay.
Yeah, What's your purpose?
Yeah. And I think the, you know, the recognition of why it's so important, you know, to you that you're going to take that leap, because I think that is obviously the driving force around why you're choosing one thing over another.
Yeah. I probably got ahead of people on the just the listening in the podcast. If you haven't been here before, we all have this matrix diagram in our heads.
Yeah, I'll just put it up here so you
can. It's two lines, vertical line, horizontal line. It creates four quadrants. And in the lower right-hand quadrant is where we write who and what's important to you. So Nesh was just talking about if he were advising somebody coming in, he would first have them to remind themselves what's important to you in your life.
Yeah.
What's your motivator? What really gets you up and going in the morning? Make sure that what you're doing is connected with that stuff. So that's where he was going. So,
and so for me, you know, knowing why something is important and, you know, is in essence, you know, my driver. And I know that we often, you know, in the ACT world look at, you know, what you're willing to do in the service of that, or, you know, in some sense, what you're willing to experience and, you know, have in your life. And that, you know, obviously is a left lower quadrant. In many instances, in many sort of ways, I don't tend to go there. I tend to go to what's important and then go in the top right-hand quadrant.
Go
where
right to the top, yep.
Yeah, yeah, in terms of saying.
That's a good place to hang out.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, this is important enough and, you know, it will conflict with other things that are important as well. And so, you know, that's that place of, you know, sitting in the center and witnessing and observing and recognizing and reflecting and, you know, being conscious of. But I try and move up there and whatever shows up is what shows up, whether it's a, you know, an early start, which, you know, interestingly seems as though it's something quite large and something quite significant.
Oh, yeah.
But when I think about it in, you know, once we place any of these things in context, to me, these things drop away, you know, I'm sure you guys would have seen recently the, you know, huge fires that have
been
ripping through, particularly the east coast of Australia. You know, there's property damage, there's loss of lives, you know, there's huge, vast areas of you know, forestry and, you know, beautiful nature that's been destroyed, which, you know, obviously means a lot of wildlife as well. I think, you know, last estimates were, you know, well over, you know, half a billion, you know, animals that have been destroyed.
Yeah.
So once we put all these things into perspective, and I like to try and do that, you know, to be grateful for, it then just kind of says to me, well, a 4 a.m. wake up isn't anything too heavy a burden. And we, you know, I wake up in a beautiful home, you know, that has insulation, and, you know, I quietly get up and I have two little girls that are sleeping, you know, in their beds.
Yep.
You know, I have a shower, beautiful, you know, warm running water, a cupboard full of, you know, ironed clothes, and you know, certainly more clothes than I need. You know, all these things are fairly mundane, but in actual fact, they are the things that are important. And, yes. And perspective helps to yeah. see that. So sure. A 4 a.m. wake up is really negligible, at least in my mind. So, you know, I mean, I know it's hard. There are times I'm not suggesting that this is an easy lifestyle. There's plenty of work, and I get down and I, you know, have to drag my feet out many time like what's important and what needs to be done to to achieve that, to live in line with that, to you know, be satisfied in life. And these days, you know, one of my motivating factors is to be a great role model for my kids. And I think ethic of hard work is you know, something that my parents have passed over to me, and hopefully I can model to my kids as well. But I think I'll balance it more than my parents.
There you go.
Yep.
So you're, so in private practice, so you're the boss, right? It's yours. Right. Yeah. So you get to choose what kind of management model.
Yeah, absolutely. And
another thing Phil and I talk about is organizational
levels of how businesses are organized
and how some of them are very miserable to work within. Right. Well, the military that you came out of, that's known as in the color coding system as a bronze system.
Yeah.
So is government work and stuff that, and school work that Phil and I came out of. So very regulated, regimented, you know, and when you go into private practice, well, boom, you're out of that. And then you can turn around and set up whatever kind of organization you want, participatory management, or you're the boss and everybody else has to salute you, or whatever you want to set up.
or you can go for the benevolent dictatorship, Nesh.
There you go. That's the most efficient system of government known to mankind. So any of those, but I'm saying, but there's quite, that's a cool thing to be able to, you choose how you want to run things versus going into an organization and being told and you have to fit into whatever it is. So
absolutely. And that's one of the attractions, you know, when I think of, you know, who and what is important, you know, the what is certainly around, you know, having choice and being able,
being able to call your own shots.
Yeah, steer my life in the direction I'd like it to be. And you know, one of the things that I think is important for you know, designing a practice is and at least, you know, from a design perspective, looking at what is it that our staff wants. You know, happy psychologists do fantastic work, and so, you know, we don't have a particular hierarchy that we, you know, push and endorse. There's always going to be that natural hierarchy that I'm the boss.
Oh yeah, you need it.
You know,
it's necessary.
So he's describing a green organization.
Yeah, it sounds like green to me.
I think everyone's conscious of that, but at the same time, and there has to be that because someone has to be still steering the ship and making, you know, particular decisions to ensure we're around, you know, tomorrow and for the rest of the year. Otherwise, you know, it easily goes off the tracks.
Chaos ensues.
Yeah, but there's, you know, there's myself, there's a practice manager who's got, you know, 20 plus years of you know, great experience, particularly working in practices, whether it be, you know, specialist centers or general practitioners. And so it's really us that are, you know, doing the structural work of thinking about the organization, what we stand for, what we believe in, and how that's going to look, you know, for our staff. You know, we've got obviously administrative staff, so our receptionists that work hand in hand with our psychologists, and obviously our clinical staff. And it's very much a flat organization, which is probably
green,
horizontal, right? Like shared purpose. You're talking about
pretty darn green.
Yeah, sounds good.
Toward tealish. Yeah. This is the one we do, right?
Yeah.
The one we talk about. People like to work in those. They don't particularly. Well, some people like the bronzes, but they usually tire of them. And then there's orange, which is the Industrial Revolution kind of thing. And they tire of those too.
Yeah.
And then you get into your flat managements, which are the green and the teal. And these are evolutions of organizational style. And you said the magic words, you want happy psychologists working inside of your system. Where if you go to a bronze system, you know, like the, a government or even a school system like Phil came out of, they don't care about happy psychologists.
Yeah.
that's not their deal.
Happiness is not a value direction.
That's not part of their deal. and so you end up with some pretty unhappy people working within it. They don't do anywhere near, as far as psychology goes, they don't do as effective of work as they could if they really enjoyed where they were.
And I think that's a great challenge for many practices or for many businesses. I mean, the hierarchy is something that I was running away from, you know, quite intensely, you know, following the military. I just thought it was an awful way be in a workplace. And I think it works exceptionally well in the military. I mean, you can't have any other
system. Oh, yeah, you got
it. You need it for the military, right? Yeah. We don't diss on it. It's just whether you want to spend a lifetime in there or not.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And yeah, that they have to have systems that work for that environment. The system that works for us, I think, and really the what, you know, I ask all the time, what's important? For me, the reason why psychologists have trained so hard and gone through all that university and, you know, racked up enormous debts at, you know, for their fees and put in the work while their, you know, colleagues have probably been employed. The reason why we did so is because we're a helping profession. You know, we love humans. We want to assist. We want to help. We want to go out and contribute in that way. And that's for many of us, that's the what, you know, what is important. And when I think about it from what frustrates me is all the red tape, you know, jumping through the hoops and the like. And you know, I certainly found that in my, placements at university is going to different organizations, the red tape was immense. I just thought, it's an appalling way to do psychology, at least in my eyes.
I would agree.
I'll create it, and really, my intentions are, as we say, you know, happy psychologists, which means let's remove the red tape, let's allow us to do our clinical work, focus on our clients, have administrative supports, and we've got exceptional staff at the front who are really invested in being part of the therapy, you know, where they look after our clients in an exceptional way, whether it be, you know, the first phone call, the way that we greet our clients using their name.
How you set the context right from the beginning, right? Yep.
100%. And we develop, you know, that group think of how we are as an organization. And so, you know, there are perks and those sorts of things, you know, which has been hard to balance for me, you know, this toward away stuff. But, you know, the perks of running a business and how to try and commercially make that all, you know, viable and make sense and connect so we can, you know, be around, you know, for tomorrow. But we've got flexible hours for our staff. So, you know, full-time staff will get to choose what hours they come in, you know, between anywhere from 7 a.m. through to 6.
Okay, so they're setting their own hours within their practice, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they can do a 4-day week if that's what they choose, obviously extended hours, or do, you know, 4.5 days. Yeah, right. We've got flexibility. We provide gym memberships so that everyone's, you know, active. We do lots of lunches and breakfasts.
Are there going to be some people contacted you for employment?
But it's something we invest heavily into. You know, it's private practice can be lonely.
That's the biggie. Yeah. Isolation. Yeah.
You know, and we have a lot of, what we call contractors in Australia. So people come into organizations and they contract out, you know, saying, you know, I'm going to, you know, work for a particular, hourly rate or whatever it might be. And the challenge in there is trying to re-educate, you know, psychologists around what that actually means and what the actual costs are. And when you go out and do your own superannuation and, you know, account for no-shows of clients and, you know, so on and so forth. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to balance all those things. And so we run a very different type of model, which is an employee basis. And once again, there's no tension in the matrix around who's getting what clients and how they're being referred out and, you know, who's getting more admin support or not and you know, retention rates and the like. So we remove all of that. You know, we try and take the tension out of the matrix, so to speak, so that the who and what remain central.
Yeah.
And then we've got, you know, reasonable ideas around, you know, the number of clients to see each day, so that we can kind of feel fulfilled, but we balance that with the administrative work. So I think we've got a unique model.
You've got a good model. Yeah. Phil and I know. We
very nice.
We've dealt with lots of folks.
Yeah.
Some are not like what you're describing at all, which is good. And once again, you've got a pretty advanced administrative model in the organizational evolution. I forget the name. What's his name, Phil?
Frederick Laloux, Reinventing Organizations.
He's the one who came up with the red, which is the mafia and stuff. Amber, which is military schools, government. Orange, which is really the industrial revolution, cotton mills and Microsoft and whatever. And then you go into the greens, which are the benevolent dictators, like what you're describing. And then there are teal organizations where 10-person teams are a workforce in and of themselves. They share in decision-making and stuff. They're still within a larger organization, but they're their own bosses within that. But it's a specialized kind of thing. Most people who are moving up are like you, which are the business owner who has very green ideas, going to listen to folks and make a pleasant working environment. Ben and Jerry's. Have you ever heard of the ice cream Ben and Jerry's?
I have. We've got them.
They're sort of the, I think they got bought out.
Well, so. they don't do that anymore. But when it was just Ben and Jerry running.
Back when it was Ben and Jerry's, it was cool and you smoked dope and had a good time. They were the bosses and the owners, but everybody had a good time. And we're well taken care of and got free ice cream and gym memberships and all that gets, you know, like that.
it does make a difference. You know, if a client at the end of the day doesn't look like they're going to be showing, you know, we encourage our staff, if all the admin and that's been completed, you know, go home early. There's no point of you sitting here, you know, just clocking up the hours.
Oh my gosh.
Demonstrate that you're here when in actual fact, you know, there's no client to be seen. So it just
you have the dream place where people want to go work.
People sending resumes your way. I can see it now.
It's
there's no more value that you can add at the end of the day. Right? There's no more clients around, right?
it's a hard balance though in terms of, you know, running that sort of space, because it's important that we look after, obviously, you know, our staff. I mean, trying to support them to do best quality work, which means then we can focus on evidence-based, you know, therapy, like, you know, the ACT model. But it's also about trying, you know, for me at least, trying to take a little bit of time away from my clients. You know, one of my who and what's, you know, is my clients. And one of my greatest challenges is getting away from my clients. You know, I inevitably, you know, have that compulsion to say, yes, I can see, you know, this client is struggling.
More and more and more.
Squeeze one more in, right?
Have to be careful.
Yeah.
You can do it.
And,
right?
And it gets in the way of developing a business. It gets in the way of, you know, working on the practice. And we try and do a lot of IT sort of, you know, using technology to enhance the practice. Everything from sort of signing in when you arrive for clients to effectively tell the psychologist that you've arrived, through to doing all your paperwork. You know, we have obviously, you know, psychometric measures. We've converted all of those so they're electronic and they just go into the client's, you know, folder, you know, without obviously any errors or, you know, human handling, being able to send that via text or, you know, via email, doing consent forms via text and via email, you know, being able to do online bookings. There's so many aspects, you know, reminders, you know, before an appointment and, yep. And the like, oh, all yeah. these electronic yeah,
very,
systems.
Very important.
Oh, yeah. I need to work on, and that, you know, that's my struggle. You know, how do I yeah. work on the business and support the staff while my heart still very much lies with seeing clients. So there's that natural conflict of, I want to see the clients because that's what I love doing. And my other passion, which is kind of a funny conflict is to develop something that is bigger and larger than myself that can see more clients. And so it's kind of hard. It's my mind.
I salute you.
Yeah. Worthy stuff.
Worthy stuff. Worthy problems to have. Very cool stuff. Right. What you describe is quite cool and quite rare yeah. here in the United States.
Oh, very much so.
So,
Well, psychology is new. Psychology is new in Australia. So in many ways, Australia's only adopted a government sort of, we call it Medicare, which is a government health scheme where if you go and see a psychologist through being referral from a GP, mm-hmm. there is an allocation of, you know, funding that supports your sessions, and so we call that Medicare. Okay. No different to if you go and see your GP, and let's say it costs, you know, $50 to see a GP, the government will rebate you, let's say, 35 of those dollars, mm-hmm. And they do the same thing in Australia. But that's only something that's come out. Look, it's probably coming up to or closing up to maybe 12 or maybe even 15 years. So we're in early days. You know, psychology in Australia is, you know, maybe in its, you know, childlike years. And really? We have a great opportunity to develop a benchmark of how psychology can, mm-hmm. you know.
That's a good thing. Yeah. Because like your model, it's a good thing.
Yeah, that's a way good
yeah, thing. We're trying to kind of say, come on, guys, you know, come on, team, let's do it in a way we can impress our clients. And, you know, you're going to do that by, you know, having great clinicians first and foremost. I think we've got pretty good training these days. You know, we've got very, very interested and motivated, you know, clinicians that are client focused. I think by virtue of the work that we do and the people that we attract, but then obviously giving them the tools and making it seamless, so we don't have to go out and, you know, do yeah. red tape and all the other yeah. nonsense that ends up consuming our lives. And right. and that's that stuff that we want to move away from. Yeah. But I think we've got to structurally move away from yeah. it rather than just yeah. do. You know, I mean, obviously,
oh, yeah.
you know, make the changes where you can, and we've got mm-hmm. to kind of accept what we can't.
You got it.
And that balance, you know, yeah. where we can be motivated to do the structural things is important.
Yeah. It sounds like, you know, you're as I'm thinking about it, it's like you're noticing what's working for you. You're noticing what's in the best interest of the client. And then you're always coming back to that, the act. Workability question is this working to get us where we want to go? You know, that's
yeah,
a great
yeah.
model for it's a great business model too. As
it is, yes.
out for you.
And it's hard because what I think is you know, works for me. You know, it's almost a dictatorship at that point because it's yeah. kind of like, oh, I think this kind of works, so we're going to go out and put that forward. Where I suppose I've evolved is. where staff are more involved in these processes mm-hmm. of what do we as a group is going to be helpful, or you know, how might we look at flexibility in the workplace rather than it just being, you know, I've come up with this, you know, air quotes, brilliant idea.
All ideas are brilliant, aren't they?
But you go, but you then send it out to them, and when they talk at you, you listen.
Right.
Well, yeah, we have open forum meetings, and so everyone gets
number one most reports. Important thing for humans is to be heard. Right. And Phil and I both, that's the deal. Where upper management comes down with their air quotes great ideas.
Yeah, here's a brilliant idea for you.
and shoves them down to the workforce. And they say, we would like your input. And they don't.
No.
And they don't take it.
Yeah.
And then the implementation comes about just the way they said anyway. And everybody hates it because they weren't heard. The biggie is that they weren't heard. And so one of the big things is that when you come up with, and somebody needs to come up with the ideas. I mean, that's your job, but then run them out there and say, what do you think? You think this will work? You know, maybe it will, maybe it won't. Maybe we have
and
a
there's that testing phase. Yeah. All yeah. Right.
You gotta try it.
Tabling it, let's have a look. You know, the fear is always there. You know, I mean, especially with the IT sort of stuff, the fear is when you don't know something,
yeah, exactly,
you don't go there. Versus, you know, that question of if it's a good idea to do, you know, maybe we go out and invest in that despite the fear of it's going to be a terrible result, or it's going to be very expensive to try and, you know, achieve, or who's going to go out and manage the IT or whatever it might be. Yeah. That's where I work very hard. That probably staff don't get to see the work that goes in the background of saying we're going to push this forward to make it happen. And then you're in the testing phase, and the testing phase is the nice part. You know, we do it, we get some feedback. You know, quite often there are aspects that are enjoyable, and when, you know, we all say, yeah, that's actually really helped, and it's made it better for the clients, or it's made it easier for us. It, you know, it's less handling. And then we have to tweak. So once again, there's lots of, you know, pain and effort that goes into adapting it and changing it. And you know, that's my job as well, to go out and do that in the background. So, it's not the most pleasant part of what I do, but you know, the proof, you know, is in the pudding, as they say. Not that I'm a pudding fan,
that's the same.
Yeah.
Yes. And you know, at the end of the day, it resonates with what I believe in, and
there you
know,
go.
Yeah.
Well, you have done, I mean, something that probably Phil did and I have not ever had, and we've had several of these green, amber, orange, green, teal conversations, but we were never talking to somebody running one of them, any of them.
This is the ground.
And I'm going to tell you right now, the odds of us talking on a podcast with somebody running a red one are really low.
Yeah. Unless they amber on, and don't tell us ahead of time.
Yeah, amber on up, we're okay with. Yeah. But you're obviously running a green organization. Yeah. And that's cool. Yeah. Now we get to hear one. And if anybody wants to know what in the world are they talking about, it's Fred, right? Frederick Laloux,
Reinventing Organizations.
And it's called Reinventing Organizations.
And we always
Illustrated Guide.
Yeah, we always recommend the Illustrated Guide.
Right, because it's got really nice pictures, and Phil and I need pictures.
And it's an enhancement of the original book.
Right, and it's really well done, and it'll tell you about the evolution of workplaces in human culture. And it's very interesting. And when you read it, you quickly realize you probably want to be working for a green or a teal. And so Nesh has got himself running and has chosen to do one of those nice green ones.
Yes.
And so let's all go to Australia and go to work for him.
Right now. Well,
I think psychology, you know, practices lend themselves out to that because hierarchy.
Oh, it's waiting to be had. Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but here in the States, I guess psychology is a little older. And so the set thing is you come out of graduate school and you're brand new and you have to go do an internship. And these days, almost everybody does a year of postdoctoral training. And you end up in these amber or orange organizations. Just, you know, I mean, you're in the VA, you're in the government or something, and maybe it's orange. And it's not very pleasant. And you got a bunch of debt, so you need to be paying stuff off. And you can get stuck in one of those jobs for a long time. And it's really not what you had in mind when you want to become a helping professional. So your organization, your green, is much more what they had in mind.
Yeah.
That was the picture
in their heads when
they were going to school. And so it's not easy to create one of those and get it going. You have done that. And you can help other people that were motivated to create theirs and have other people working for them. It takes a special kind of person to be a NESH.
I would say it's hard not to create a green.
Yeah.
Another way to go, Nesh. Yes.
I say that because if we think about, you know, what, you know, whether it's the Hexaflex or whether it's the Matrix, whether it's, you know, the philosophical understanding of you know, the ACT world, to be underpinned by humanity, and this is what we do and this is what we train, we have to, in some sense, fight against what opposes that. Yeah. And not that this is a fight, maybe the fight isn't the right word, but we certainly have to oppose.
I have my fist up.
Yeah.
We're there with you.
We're radicals.
That's it. We call it, you have to practice what you preach.
Yeah.
You're embodying the ACT
stance. Right. If you're going to be promoting psychological flexibility and in terms of pro-social psychological safety, then you're going to be in a green or a teal organization. Yeah. Excuse me, I'm losing my voice.
Or at least trying to head that way.
Or you're trying to head that way.
Yeah.
Yes. Because other than that, your flexibility and your safety are
going to go way down. Whoop.
Right. They're going to suffer. So if you're true to your psychology roots, you're going to create a green organization. But still, there's a lot of motivation. There's a lot of just being an organizer like Nesh is. That's cool. So I hope other people step up and create these organizations in the United States. So then other people who are not as organizationally, you know, motivated can go to work for you.
Yeah.
Not you, but somebody like you in the United States.
Because it's doable, and Nesh, you're doing it. And that's kind of part of why we're doing these things are doable. They're difficult, as you said, and they're doable.
Yeah. Oh, there we go. I like do it. Difficult and doable. That's a bumper sticker.
Yeah, it is. It is.
That's a Forrest Gump moment right there.
Absolutely. And it's worthwhile because it's what I believe we all practiced, we all trained for.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the idea of practicing to be a firefighter, but never given an opportunity to work with people and, you know, save property and do rescues and so on. Not because it's not available, but you're just never given the opportunity because there's too much red tape. That every time there's a fire, you've got to fill out a form.
Yeah,
to go
right.
whether you're allowed to go out and enter or not.
Hold on. No, we need to form a task force.
Yeah really. Let's get a subcommittee together to cover the fire.
I need an inquiry as to whether we can or can't.
We'll send out a questionnaire.
Oh, my God.
Right.
Yep. And that's what you get in a lot, and especially in the AMBRA organizations, you get a lot of that.
I think, when we start operating in that way, in so many ways, it says that our training is no longer valid.
Exactly.
Your evidence-based practice no longer exists, and you need to be told by someone whether something's appropriate or not, when in actual fact, we've been provided an opportunity to act as professionals, because we're trained as professionals, if you allow people to be that, they know what to do. You know, they're not silly people, and psychologists are, quite clever and considered. We do have great processes in place to ensure that
if
you're struggling, they're supported, like supervision, making sure that you've got your peers around. Mm-hmm. There are ethics, there's, our governing bodies that can go out and support with professional advice and the like.
Which anybody who's inside of this profession knows that's plenty.
Yeah.
Navigate. Yeah. Plenty. Yeah. Don't need a bunch of red tape on top of that. Will really bog you down and keep you from doing what you love to do. So this is cool.
Yeah.
Wow. What are we going to title this thing?
You get to title it, Nesh.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Yeah.
At least I'm close that I can get.
Yeah.
I'm getting my pen out here. I had it. Oh, there it is. This is my title paper here.
I'm going to need a bit of help here. I can't just pull something out of a bag.
Let me see. Well, we're doing The Art of Being running a collaborative,
whatever kind of way you want to define it or describe it for yourself.
I like the word something that's consistent with. So, a act matrix consistent practice.
There you go.
Ooh, I like it.
I think consistency, congruency is always an important. So when I think about decision making in the practice, mm-hmm. I'm always thinking, what's the intent? Is it consistent with the intent?
Exactly.
You know, what will this actually do versus what do I want it to stand for? So I think consistency is probably a useful term that kind of talks about the function of how decisions are made throughout
That is perfect.
Yep.
Because that brings in workability and
all of that stuff.
Right. All in a simple fashion.
Yeah.
Excellent. People are going to love this.
Yes.
And they're going, man, you're going to be getting calls. I swear.
Yes, you are.
I swear, because I know too many people who are not working where you're working. And it's killing them.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, Nesh, it's really killing them.
Yeah, especially, here it's bad. It's.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think we gravitate out of, like Devin said, we
get stuck in these organizations, I've done private practice and school alongside. And I know that, with school psychologists, just the same thing. Once you get that training and degree, you're subsumed under, you become what they want you to become. Crusty in bed where they just take you down and they chop off your arms and the things that you can do. And you're only able to work within these prescribed settings, And then I think the fear part, like you talked about at the very beginning, that's a huge piece. I think fear shows up and that can stop you dead in your tracks. And then all the other things that, you're getting the little messages and the big messages you're getting from that organization that you're acting within. And it takes really some courage to be able to step out of that and at least step back from it and say, hey, is this where I really want to be and where I really want to be going?
Yeah. And then the case of if you do want to get out, many people just don't have the means.
And that's the other thing.
To go out on their own, and there's not some place like you have where they could go to work for it. Now, I can think of one here in the state of Maine that people used to go to, and he was a good guy, but he's since retired, so I don't know if that practice is since still going. But, you know, he couldn't take everybody. Everybody else was, you're either going out and hanging up your own shingle and your own one person, you know, all by yourself, chief cook and bottle washer, as they say, private practice. And if that, you can do that, and people have been successful at that, but that's going to be hard to do versus going to work someplace. So we need a lot more places like yours,
right,
that will take in these bright young psychologists who are highly trained and ready to do something and not be squashed. As Phil just poignantly said, had their arms and legs cut off.
And then muzzled.
Oh my God.
Leave out the muzzling part, you know.
That's an attractive movie scene right there. Woo.
We can beat the passion out of you, I'm sure.
Oh yeah, very easily.
Oh yeah. And you know, in a lot of ways, that's what those do. That's what those institutions, that's what they want to do. So anyway, we need alternatives. So we'll act matrix consistent practice. This will be great.
Yeah.
We'll love it. They'll just love this.
Great title.
It'll be fun.
Placed.
And be prepared for consulting work here in the United States.
Yeah.
Ask you how to set these up.
Yeah.
Well, I think all of us that are, you know, very cognizant and I mean, I've embodied as much as I can in my thought, you know, around what does, you know, the matrix stand for, or you know, ACT stand for, and that versatility that, you know, we're all very well aware of, you know, whether it's a proactive way of doing organizations, or, you know, doing policy if it's government, mm-hmm. Our individual lives, you know, going to the hard places, you know, for many of us, it's those emotional things that pull us around. But if we're just thinking about, you know, what am I, I think it just keeps coming back to that who and what. You know,
you're right. It does. Yeah, that's where I always go. Right. We just go right back to who and what's important to you. Cause that's where the good stuff is. I mean, it's where the motivation is. It's where it gets you up in the morning.
Gets
you through. And then the hard stuff shows up and you say, okay, well, there's the hard stuff. However, I still got this stuff to do in the service of who and what's important to me. And here we go. Without that, you just get caught up in endless away loops. And those aren't any fun. So excellent stuff. We'll sign off now. We're a little over an hour on our podcast. No, about an hour.
No, we're good. We're good. Yeah.
We're good. We're good. But this has been wonderful. We'll have you back on.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, this has been great.
Yeah.
And thank you, Phil and Kevin. It's been a pleasure speaking with you guys. And, you know, I know it's not easy running a podcast, so I appreciate the effort that goes into producing and distributing it. So, thanks for the opportunity.
Oh, thank you. And we'll talk soon.
All right.
Sounds good.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.